You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
What's going on? This is episode 229 of the IT and the D Show. And guests this week include Ian and Chris from Soothsayer Analytics. We're going to be talking about big data, machine learning, AI, and buzzword bingo is going to be happening in the studio tonight. I cannot wait. Also, segment number two, Dan Gregory's in the house. He is one of the engineers over at Creative Breakthrough CBI, also one of the hosts of Security Jabber. We're going to be talking about tech trends, security trends.
Security and properties of security.
Yeah. Security accessories.
Demented and sad, but social.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I cannot wait. And how they're tackling enterprise data security. Should be a fun conversation. Dave, you may fire when ready.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Following program is intended for mature audiences.
I'm Wyatt, that's Gary, you're Bob, and you're Dave. This is the IT and the D Show.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
Just where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything but that! No!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Hi, this is Christy Swanson, and you're listening to the IT in the D Show. And Bob and Dave touch my hoo-hoos.
What happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bumhole?
Exactly.
Come on.
What the hell with this? I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the IT in the D Show.
This is Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley, and the only two guys I hate more than Dinesh are Bob and Dave. Suck it, guys.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka, Sweep the Leg, listening to IT and the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the beak off.
Hi, this is Kelly LeBrock from Weird Science. So, Bob and Dave, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Are we at a break yet?
Hey, this is Zach McGowan from Planet Earth. You're listening to IT and the D Show.
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT and the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds.
What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Hey, Detroit, this is Anthony Michael Hall. You're listening to my buddies Bob and Dave on IT and the D.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump. The IT and the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear? I'm in my underwear. Hey, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey. I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear. That's a fact.
Hey, everybody. This is Tony Todd. What's happening? You may know me from Candyman, The Rock, Sushi Girls, Zoom, Night of the Living Dead. A lot of pop culture media madness. Anyway, you're listening to IT in the D Show Business.
I'm totally into Dave, but not so much Bob.
This is Robert Hayes, Ted Stryker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Magumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat stick.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guys. Ho!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do. The question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Now buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Welcome. What's going on? This is episode 229 of the one and only IT in the D Show. We're broadcasting live here in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. It's Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker, is in studio. Find us online itinthed.com, and subscribe to us everywhere. Fine podcasts are sold. Do us a favor. Mark your calendars. Go to the Meet tab on our site. That's M-E-E-T. We got three events coming up over the next, like, 10 days.
We do it. Dude, this the beginning of this year is just not pretty for our livers at all.
Good. I'm welcoming it. Mark your calendars. On the 9th, we're going to be in Ann Arbor. Randy's going to be there at the Haymaker at 5 o'clock. On the 11th, we got our podcaster meetup at Selena's right down the street on 11 Mile.
That's Thursday, yeah.
And then on the 18th,
And we should point out with those that you don't have to be on our network to come to that. Like, you don't have to be a part of Podcast Detroit. The doors are open. I mean, like, podcasting, properties of podcasting. Basically, if you like drinking and hanging out and talking podcasting, show up.
Now, part of the allure of Podcast Detroit was building community. It's kind of like how we started IT and the D. So we're trying to extend that. So, yeah, if you're podcasting out of your basement or if you just want to talk to a couple shows that you might listen to, feel free to come on out. That's on the 11th and the 18th. We're going to be at Falling Down Beer Company, place we're a little bit familiar with these days.
A little bit.
On the 18th from 5 to 8. Again, it's all IT.
I do think the best line that I've gotten so far is like, so did you guys like just have like a punch card you redeemed to become owners? Or
on your 100th visit, you get shares right. of stock. No, but like we always say, no speakers. No cover, no agendas, no idiots.
Let me Cutco knives?
Yes.
Oh, my God, Cutco knives.
Of course.
No, none of those. No fruit basket salesman. No managered 401k. No.
Right.
No.
What about my crypto account?
That's technology.
No. So I don't know if we want to dive in. So here's one thing I wanted to dive in. I got to thank Ian, who's a regular tweeter and hangs out at the he actually came on Saturday and dropped me off one of the Super Nintendo classics that I've been jonesing for.
Suck up.
I totally is. But he turned me on to a game, and I wanted to, for 2 minutes, I want to talk about gaming real quick. It's called, Cuphead?
Cuphead. Yep, yep.
And if you've never seen it, I highly suggest giving it a look-see. It's a guy's been developing this for like 4 years. It's based on like 1930s, like Mickey Mouse. And it's been hand drawn for the last 4 years.
It's like Steamboat Willie stuff.
Yeah. And it's kind of like Super Mario. It's all boss fights, but it's insanely like I gave it to my 13-year-old and she says it's Rage City because it's a difficult game. But how cool. I mean, it's one of those things where you're kind of taking gaming to an entirely different level. It's so worth the checkout.
It's like Disney meets Clockwork Orange.
Totally. Kind of thing, yeah. Right? Just like you're like.
Well, and we touched on this somewhere between 4 and 6 months ago. We touched on it because there was some controversy about it because some people got cranky because in some of the sections they use the, you know, because it's very old time cartoony. And in some of them they went like old time cartoony blackface and some of that kind of stuff that people got cranky about.
See, shame on that. See, I didn't know that and you brought it up to me today and I go, you know, like you can't edit that out. Like I know you're trying to be real to the era, but come on, man. Yeah. Don't be a shit about
durka,
it.
Durka, durka, durka.
Right. But one of the things I wanted to touch on before we dive into the IT stuff is for like 3 weeks we talked about Battlefront 2.
All right, so and, 2 seconds though. God bless whoever it was that hosted the Golden Globe Awards last night.
Oh boy.
The funniest joke of the entire night, I thought, was when he looked out in the audience and he said, you know, and for all the male celebrities here in the room, tonight will be the first night where you can hear your name read out loud and not panic.
Boo!
And so Oprah's running for president, too,
apparently,
right?
Yeah.
You get a tax break, and you get a tax break, and you get a tax break.
Wait, because her track record is giving people stuff they have to pay taxes on.
And you got to pay taxes, and you got to pay taxes.
Yeah, right.
And she can ask the entire country to look under their chair and look for their tax break.
Yeah, right. No, I wanted to touch on Battlefront 2 because we trashed on it for like 3 weeks, and I'm waist deep into it now. I've been playing it a lot. And I don't get where, like, it's funny how people got butthurt over something I don't think they understood. I'm not missing anything. Like, the whole big beef was you can't get Darth Vader.
You can at the end.
You can't, right.
Right. My son beat it in one night.
Did he? Oh, yeah, but like.
Okay, but so like that's my nephew. I had to sit my nephew down and have this whole conversation about what beating a game means.
I guess getting
beating
to the
a
end
game
of what
does not mean sprinting all the way through it and getting to the you're done wall,
which is what he did.
Yeah,
right.
And that's fine. Then you go back and you do all this stuff. But like playing multiplayer, I'm doing better on this than I ever did on Call of Duty or Battlefield in terms of kill death ratio. I don't get what the hostility was. And there's not, like, there isn't one point in my playing going, I wish I could buy some crates so I could get this gun mod because it's fine. It's not that the difficulty. They made it so, like, snipers can't camp. They made it so it's actually pretty fun if you, however you want to play. Mm-hmm. And again, I think people are fine with it now. It's like that initial, like, I think the trendy thing to hate everything.
Of course.
Is becoming so prevalent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the thing that people were a little worried about was if they accepted it, like, so openly that companies might start getting the idea that, like, microtransactions can become a more natural thing in every kind of game. And I think that was more of the fear.
I had
because apparently I was just talking about this. Apparently some new the new MMA game that's coming out, like, Punching Power is a DLC.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I had somebody pretty hostile with me that I bought it, and I was talking about it likingly. It's like, you're contributing to the problem of gaming in the world today and bad.
You're a 1%er, Bob.
And I'm like, can't you just play the goddamn game and not?
Right.
Like, I'm not contributing to me having something to do.
Bob, we just did a meatball episode about people who don't understand how to just drink and eat bacon and have a good time. I mean, come on.
How do you not? Those are, if you haven't listened, by the way, with me, Dave, and I did a meatball sandwich on Frankenmuth.
We did two.
Two of them.
It was a two-part.
Because it's, on the holidays, you have to go to Frankenmuth.
It's a thing.
Right. Bronner's didn't have any one-star reviews, which I was shocked at. But I'll be damned if the rest of the place.
Well, no, they did. They only had like four, which is why it wasn't funny enough to
go
right. Yeah.
But Senders and all that, like people that don't get it and think it's like a period piece, people wearing lederhosen, and it's absolutely hysterical.
Yeah, people compared the costumes they wear at the Bavarian Inn to a Star Wars convention. It was amazing.
So some absolute shocking news came out that there's apps that listen to your TV activity.
Right, so that was the weird thing, because everybody's all Facebook is listening to you conspiracy theory, and apparently there's this kid, Alfonso, that, okay, yes, allegedly listens, but it's allegedly only trying to listen to what you're watching on TV so that it can then sell that information to the advertisers.
I think they've been trying to figure this out for years, basically. Like, what do you watch on your TV? If you're just sitting there watching broadcast television, they have no way of telling what kind of saturation the ads have, right? Mm. But apparently they found 250 apps in the Google Play Store and a bunch on the Apple iOS Store as well that have this technology baked in. And this is not the first time this has happened. There was something called Silverlight, I believe, or Silver Fox or something that did basically the same thing. And the FTC said, you can't do that. So, I mean.
Wow.
Well, because, I mean, let's be honest. We all know that Nielsen doesn't work. It's completely flawed. You know, Arbitron
rated number one.
Right. You know, and we've talked about this. Like, you know, Facebook had that debacle, what, about a year ago, where it was like, and this is where all those conspiracy theories started, where it started prompting you as soon as you started a post that you were watching whatever happened to be on your TV.
Mm-hmm. It's, are you talking about the ones that they emit some sort of ultrasonic pulse or tone and it's picked up by the.
No, it's actually listening.
Oh, it's listening for specific cues for words. Okay.
Wow. Dave, didn't you get were talking about Nuri going to India. Didn't you get, like, trips to
– Dude, what? I forget what I had open, but I'm like – I look at him. I'm like, holy shit. I am spending way too much time around Nuri. He's like, why? I'm like, I'm getting ads for direct flights from Detroit to India now.
Wow.
Right.
Jesus.
It's not like I talk about India all that often.
You're not on Expedia.com looking for India?
Yeah, no. It was some random app that I opened up, and the in-app ad was Detroit to India direct flights.
Wow. And what's even scarier, these are in games. So your kids basically are downloading these games, click accept the terms and conditions. If it even tells you there – And then now basically your kids are spies for ad agencies.
And that's the thing I – like my kids now are like, Dad, can I download this free game? And I'm like, let me see it. You know.
Well, and that's the thing. So always go back, check the permissions that you've allowed for the apps. Mm-hmm. Turn off the microphone if it doesn't seem like it needs
– Clash of Clans could turn on the front-facing camera and there's no way you wouldn't download that app. Let's be honest.
Well, yeah. I turned it off.
So, right. Don't you dare take away my Clash of Clans, but don't you dare spy on me with a front-facing camera.
Yeah, right.
A couple of years ago, actually, do you guys remember when Pokemon Go came out?
Oh, yeah.
People
30 gigs of people on the toilet playing Clash of Clans.
People freaked out with that game when they realized, like, permissions. Like, I mean, no one really cared about the permissions for apps. But
dude, Facebook Messenger.
Yeah, that was the one.
Was the one that, like, made me want to just start choking people. Because they freaked about Messenger but had no idea that it actually asked for less than the Facebook app itself did.
Wow. And for those at home, you can actually go into your iOS settings, privacy, microphone, or on Android, go apps, notifications, app permissions, and then microphone. And you can see which ones of your apps are needing a microphone. And if it doesn't need it, turn it the hell off.
Yeah.
I can see. Don't you dare take away from my Siri, though.
Right.
Yeah.
I can see in the future where online marketing ads that follow you, just like you were saying, Dave, all of a sudden you turn around and say, you know, I'm going to play some Call of Duty or, you know, Battlefront 2 or whatever. And you get on and you see, like, literally the Death Star floating in outer space with a commercial with a little ticker tape thing going around it.
That's right, around the little center, the center line.
To India right now.
Yeah, like at an arena.
Like, baked into the game in real time.
Dan, we're probably going to need help on this one, too, but, like, the bomb that dropped this week and the one that got all my friends kind of in an uproar that are in the data center business was this Intel thing, basically talking about for the last 10 years.
And I loved Intel's response. They didn't say it's not a problem. They just said, hey, it's not just us.
Yeah, right. A little. It's not just us, guys. Come on.
Well, no. Intel stock dropped like 10% because of this, and AMD shot through the roof.
And the thing with that too, there's
now
some
AMD's
releases.
Affected.
Now it's AMD's are affected too. Yeah,
iPhone, Google, Android, almost everything that's got solid state baked into it in the last decade or so has this flaw, and there's this magic space that exists between the CPU and memory, and there's and it's in the transference of information and data, and it gets all sciencey and really techie. But exactly, that's the spot that they're actually able to see as your data goes from one of those spots in the processor to the next.
Well, everybody's been moving to solid state. That's been the thing.
Yeah. Baked into everything.
They say it's been in every processor since 1995 with the exception of Atom and Itanium. Wow. And that also, I mean, if it's on your own computer, maybe a big deal. But if you're in a hosting environment and you have 100 virtual machines running on the same physical chip, basically you could peek into memory of any of those virtual machines running, right?
It's all yours.
So apparently it's funny. Intel didn't even know. The CEO was just on CNBC. I'm reading the updates. And the Intel CEO basically said Google told him 2 months ago.
But didn't the Intel CEO
in June, sold stock in October. And this came to light.
The Intel CEO. He went on TV and said Google told him and to kind of cover his ass?
Lies!
Oh, see?
Lies.
Can't believe anything anymore.
I think there's already an investigation into that stock sale. It's kind of weird. And then they've been patching it this week. So Microsoft pushed out a patch, which bricked some AMD processors.
Yeah, which I – what the hell?
Maybe they didn't test it well.
Right.
I don't know.
It's more or less based on the architectural concept of how PCs were designed to work in the chipsets. Like, hey, we're going to put the CPU here. We're going to put the floating point processor here. We're going to put the audio section of the chip over here. And now, oh, wait, all these things have to talk to one another. So we'll create this kind of, busy universal language for these things to talk through memory to one another. And the concept always been the same. It isn't broken, so let's not fix it. That part's not broken. So.
Well, it's like TCP/IP.
Correct.
Why do these hacks keep happening? Because the internet's supposed to be about openness and sharing.
Right.
Exactly. Because it's internet.
Yes.
Apparently, Mac has updated as well. And so if you're running the newest version of macOS or tvOS or iOS, you are protected from this vulnerability.
If you downloaded it. Yep. You're good.
Interesting. So I want to dive into this whole state right net neutrality thing because I find that intriguing as all hell.
This has been a crazy week for net neutrality.
Yeah. No, just if you haven't been following, the federal government has had this weird ruling and it's getting appealed and it's the Senate has put enough votes to get it appealed and it might go through. Who knows what's going
to
happen?
Well, no, there has to be a hearing and a vote now.
Right.
Because they've hit the threshold of 30. But what I found interesting, because California and anybody who deals with anything web related knows that California is a giant pain in your ass.
And Massachusetts.
It's true. I mean, California is the one that passes all these weird laws and weird rules, and they're always tighter about this, and, privacy and all that
Everything causes cancer in California.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. So you have to code basically your website to handle California's nonsense and then flutter out through
it. God bless y'all, California.
Yeah, exactly. And so they were the first ones that came down and said, okay, well, the federal government says there's no net neutrality. Well, we're going to pass a law that says there is.
And so is Washington now and New York.
And Nebraska.
Surprisingly enough, Nebraska.
Yeah.
So, but how does that work if my data center is in X?
And you serve data to California?
So basically if I don't
– Do you serve data to California?
All right. So if I'm Verizon, through the phone.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of scenarios where you wouldn't.
No. Right.
pretty much anybody that serves. So basically, that just threw a monkey wrench into the entire all the things.
Yes,
because everyone's going to ping through California one place, way, shape, or form.
Yeah, welcome to peering networks. And
right.
And also, if I'm Comcast or if I'm Ameritech or any of these people, and I have customers. California is a major market. Washington is a major market. So am I going to segment my network up to
handle that differently? No.
No, but that's the thing. When people try to screw with stuff, people try to figure out how to not screw with stuff.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of, guess what? Good luck.
And I think this is a big deal.
You know, I'm all in favor of states' rights as long as they agree with what I want.
Exactly.
I think this is a big deal, America. Too, because America. We've got those 30 votes. If you are a senator or a congressperson, the millions of comments that went to the FCC should tell you that the public overwhelmingly wants
this. We have spoken.
And if you vote against this, your ass is out next term.
We'll remember.
We'll
remember.
Oh, yeah.
The internet never forgets.
Yeah, we'll remember.
Right. No matter how
until
hard
you recognize the name in the voting booth going, I like Carl Levin. And you forget he voted. I know he's out. I'm just using that as an example.
I remember.
Right. You
forget I'm the petty vindictive one.
No kidding.
Did you see that article about the weird response for that internet provider in the Northeast, though? They issued an open letter saying
Armstrong
that
Zoom.
I've never even heard of them.
Well, and so I have. But I mean, I thought it was weird. Like the way the article was presented was a lot more shitty and overly dramatic than the reality of the situation.
It was pretty dramatic.
Because the reality of the situation, you know, Armstrong Zoom comes out and says if you're using, you know, file sharing and torrents and yada, 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 they're going to hack your thermostat.
I'm going to set it to 40 degrees.
Yeah, that's not what they actually said. What they actually said was that they would start throttling users that were using P2P sharing services.
Which was not actually something that was possible before these net neutrality rules got repealed, right?
Yeah, because you couldn't just you always could, because theoretically, if you could, because one of the guys that hangs out at our events, I don't want to call him out on the show, got hit with a nasty gram and a fine and some shit because of torrenting and that kind of stuff.
Ew.
So, I mean, if you can prove illegality, yeah, you can throttle that all day long.
Hey, you're going to throttle me because of my Nest and I'm finding a new ISP.
Right. Well, so that's the thing. So, you know, if you're using P2P and like what they actually said was, hey, and if we happen to throttle you, your internet connected devices, you might not be able to get to as quickly. Like if you're sitting at work, you won't be able to hit your Nest thermostat at home. Because, that's what they said.
Because Nest doesn't actually have to have an internet connection to work.
Right.
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 Yeah. Just for the remote access.
Right. And your fridge. So
I don't have to get my lazy ass off
the
couch.
For one of the only reasons you buy it.
Right.
Right. So I can sit on my couch and go, it's a little cold in the house.
Right.
Put
Alexa,
the thing up a degree.
Oh, raise the thermostat.
That's right. 1 degree. Ah, much better. I'd have to get up for nothing.
You're going to get discounted tickets to Caribbean after that. It's like, oh, you must want to go somewhere warm.
There you go. Yeah, because it's always listening.
So speaking of the dumbest thing that I think I've read in a long time. Now, when they tried to sell bottled water to us and we bought it.
Oh, mother
of God.
And
it became such a big industry. I didn't – like we joked that it's the next thing is going to be like Spaceballs where they're selling Perry Air. Canned air. Or, you know. Well – someone went out and realized that people are really stupid and they'll buy pretty much anything, and they're marketing raw water.
Yeah.
Oh, I heard about that.
So tell me more about raw water.
Raw water. Tell us about that.
So it's water taken from the spring, untouched.
Wow. It's not cooked, so it's raw.
Yeah.
Is water from a puddle considered raw water?
It's like water sushi.
Raw sewage.
No, it's not from the water. No, it's from like springs or I mean a hose. I mean natural springs.
Right.
I mean hose.
Raw.
I mean
this pretty river that looks pretty clean. You know?
I mean a hose from the Muni. But like they're going to market. And here's the thing. You know there's granola hippies that are like, it's so much better.
Got to have some raw water.
The minerals. You can't sacrifice the minerals.
Well, I grew up on a farm.
The natural nutrients of water.
Why do you hate the planet, man? You got to drink raw water.
I grew up on a farm and had a well. Is that considered raw water?
Yes.
Could I sell that for $27 a freaking liter?
Right. We call that a diuretic.
Is that what they're charging for?
$27 a liter. And for a 2.5 gallon container, it's $69. And I saw pictures of a grocery store in San Francisco and the shelves were empty.
That's the only place on the planet you can sell that shit. You can't get away with that. I don't think anywhere else.
Oh my
on the planet.
Can I make a raw water coin as an altcoin and like sell it on an exchange?
Yeah. I want to start a company where Lake St. Clair just get in the Detroit River and just start grabbing bottles.
Go out to Belle Isle to Hipster Beach and just like take your jug and go.
Right. Yeah. $69. And every time you go globe, $69. Right.
You can call it holy water. Came from St. Clair.
Came from a hole. Right. What is that? You know, come on. Honestly, air's next. Well, no, they do have the oxygen bars in Vegas. So, I mean, you could.
Right. Been to one.
Yeah. You see, now, why would you
actually
do that?
Worked in a nightclub then.
Why would you do that?
It makes your vision a bit more clear.
It does not. Like, you're so
well. No, it actually does.
Make you tingly.
Like, if you get hyper oxygenated, that's why the like casinos pump oxygen. Addition, like they heighten the oxygen levels in casinos to keep you awake and moving.
I always thought it's that like was those wives' tale. No, that's
no,
true.
It's real.
Wow. No, it's like those commercials where they put that shit under your eyes and your bags go away for like 3 hours,
right?
And then they come back.
And then they come back,
but you're spending like $100 on this treatment. So right. You go on like on a date,
like hemorrhoid cream.
Right, totally. Your hemorrhoids go away, but only for 3 hours.
Come on back. All right. Oh my gosh.
So hey, speaking of P2P, let's take a quick break. we're going to come back with Dan Gregory from CBI and the Security Jabber podcast. This is the IT in the D podcast.
And we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Life of the American Teenager, and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
It's time for the percolator.
Welcome back. Segment 2, episode 229. The one and only IT in the D show, hanging out here in Studio 1 in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the sales guy, hanging out with Dave the geek. Nuri the FNG. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker. Find us online, itinthed.com, because we are IT in the D.
And you just you still aren't. Go away.
We love you. We love you so much. But hey, we are we're very.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, exactly. You're the best.
Thanks for the numbers.
We're very lucky to be joined by an old friend of ours, but someone that did a podcast at like 7 o'clock and hung out to be on ours. So we appreciate the time. But hey, Dan Gregory's in the house. He is one of the chief geeks over at CBI, Creative Breakthroughs. What is happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Just kicking off the new year, thinking about, you know, like everybody else, I want to change my life and do good and everything so I can forget it in about 5 more minutes.
You're not going to stop drinking and you're going to gain weight. And
no, we've always said that. So our goal, we're going to buy a building and we're just going to name it Resolutions. And January 1 to 31, it's a gym. And then February 1st, it converts to a bar.
Can we serve life water?
Great idea.
We'll serve raw water.
I love it.
Yeah. We'll have raw water there. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great
idea. I like
idea.
The idea of just having a bar called the gym.
Yes.
I'm checking in at the gym.
Where are you going? I'm going to the gym.
I'm picking stuff up and putting them down. It's beer.
Yeah.
But I'm still picking stuff up. So, hey, I mean, your life pretty much has encompassed securing networks and organizations for what, 20 years?
Yeah, I've been CBI for 15 now, and I've been doing this for two decades.
You've probably seen everything and anything, and I mean, one of the things that you know, A, we want to talk about, or B, what's on everybody's mind is, you know, and you talk to enterprises as much as we do, and it seems like to be there. I saw a vendor matrix recently,
yeah,
and there's about 20 segments of quote unquote IT security. Within those 20 segments. There's probably 20 top vendors. You have, this massive poster of vendors. How does anyone make sense of this whole ball of trying to get someone secure?
Wow, you hit that's the topic, right? That's why IT cybersecurity organizations like us exist. Everything you just outlined. So there's a tenet, and they've boiled it down to 20 different domains. I'll call them. But it's following off the old what used to be called the SANS 20, now known as the Critical Security Controls or CSC, kind of adopted by a lot of other state and federal kind of agencies. They took it and they morphed it and they said, okay, listen, we're going to keep 20 major things that you need to do. Number one is know where all your shit is. Number two is, you know, be able to configure all that stuff. Number three is like, you know, make sure you scan it for vulnerabilities. And the list goes on and on. It's prioritized though, and it's very specific in how it's prioritized. It's kind of cool. So they get together, and by there are 20 or so different state agencies, some federal agencies, some very large organizations. smart people get in a room and they say, listen, let's look at all the last breaches of the last 18, 24 months and then rearrange the 20 based on what we think we need to defend against moving forward based on that. So that's how the numbers 1 through 20 came about and how they're ordered the way they are. And why number one is, and like in a journey, you have to know, you know, where you're at before you can go anywhere. Number one says, know what is on your network. Thou shalt know what is plugged into thy network at all times. That's inventory, right? Software, hardware, everything that plugs into or can come in contact with data or a human being or the outside world or the bad guys, et cetera. Know where it all is, right? So that becomes a very difficult thing to answer. So you go through and think about all the vendors. You mentioned that matrix. All the vendors that sell all their stuff that are designed to either tackle 1 through 5 or 5, 7, and 10 or 18, 19, and 20 of the top 20, that's why they exist. They all line up their solutions, whether they know it or not, by design, because there's certain laws of physics that come into play in IT cybersecurity. You can only do what's possible because it's been designed for it to happen, right? I can't, unless you're going to invent something brand new that's never been seen before. And that happens very rarely. Like wireless networking, for example. Remember that when it came out? Mm-hmm. I remember exactly where I was. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to connect a cable to the thing I want to talk to.
Uh-huh.
So that was like revolutionary. The last time something that big happened, I mean, there's a few bursts, right, in IT security. That's one of them. The way, you know, solid state drives, that's another one. Maybe not as big, but it's another like, wow, aha moment. It's cheaper, it's faster, it lasts longer, that kind of thing. So they're happening not as frequently, and maybe when they do, they're not as big, but they still happen. But the thing is, the top 20 have been the top 20 for over two decades.
Uh-huh.
They've been rearranged. No, very true. Yeah, they've been rearranged. They've been maybe renamed or relabeled a bit. Maybe a couple of them have broken off into other other parts, but the 20 are still the 20. So get back to your original question, that matrix. That's the rules. That would be the sheet of music to which all IT cybersecurity tunes its instruments. They all sound different when they play different songs, but they're basically tuning up to the same sheet of music, right? So number one, like I said, it's everything from know what you have all the way down to number 20, which is, you know, you will conduct regular vulnerability assessments and penetration tests and do employee training, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what that is, and that's what drives what we do. If you know that and you master those, and as an organization or a person, even an individual, can say, I'm tackling all of these 20 things in the following ways, in as secure way as I can financially afford to do, then you're going to probably do pretty good on any IT cybersecurity audit.
Now, and that's the thing I always talk about is there's three things that change how cybersecurity is deployed. And, you know, mm-hmm. one is compliance and governance.
Yeah.
Number two is a breach, right? Your Target, your Home Depot, all of a sudden you're in the paper.
That'll change.
And things. Three is your level of paranoia.
We call it risk appetite.
Yeah. Fine. However you want to call it. But I mean, is that in a nutshell, or am I off base, or is there something else?
No, you're hitting the major, you know, watermarks. There are what you just mentioned. You know, there's the things you have to do. Hence compliance.
Yeah, I don't want to buy this crap, but
I have to. Why? It's a check in the box because the government says I have to make sure my network's data encrypted when I do trade of data with a government entity, sure. etc. And the next one you mentioned paranoia. It's very true, and that gets back to one of the resolutions.
It's like securing a house, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can get a dog, you can get a camera, you can get a gun, you can get, you know, the bars on the windows. Like, how far you want to go with this?
Exactly.
Right.
To get back to that analogy, my mom and dad, I won't say what city they live in, but they live in a normal Southeast Michigan city. I guess what you consider normal, average, not above or below poverty line. It's relatively populated. They still, to this day, don't lock their doors. That's their risk appetite because that's them. They're old school. I live in northern part of Oakland County, way in the middle of nowhere, basically, and I lock everything I've got and turn lights on. I have cameras outside my house. That's my risk appetite. So organizations have to do that up to themselves and evaluate where's our risk appetite and how much are we willing to take on or write off. And that drives the level of scrutiny that you're going to look at those 20 items, for example. It's like, I'll blow off the first 10. I don't care about those type of thing.
And we've seen the growth or the emergence of the CISO, what, over the last maybe, what, 5, 6 years, 7 years?
Oh, yeah.
A.K.A. the guy that has to sign the paper.
Right.
Right.
The CIO said,
the first guy they're going after.
Yeah, which was the CIO, and now he's like, no, it's you.
Flip a coin.
But where did that whole thing come from, governance compliance? Where, I mean, that it seems like that went from no titles existing to everyone having one.
Yeah. Titles are funny things, right? You know, the whole, if you subscribe to the whole Peter Principle thing and everything else, but the CISO, his role has changed, or her role has changed considerably. Exponential growth, the hockey puck, the hockey stick swing going up to the right, in that they've had it, that it's no longer good enough for a CISO to be the best IT guy. Okay. You can't be that person anymore. You have to know business. You have to know operations. You have to know and be more involved in what the company does and its mindset at the executive level and therefore its approach to cybersecurity. So you have to be able to bring that. It's not good enough to be, yeah, I'm the guy that knows Linux better than anybody else. Well, you're the new CISO. Congratulations.
Right.
Here's your new card. Sign here.
Exactly. So it really is just a title at the end of the day. But the CISO's role's changed dramatically in this new environment that we're living in. It's no longer good enough to be just IT. I mean, it's information security, not IT security.
Well, and everybody's business focused, and IT's taken a kind of a weird, not to say backseat, but it's almost a front seat, mm-hmm. where the whole entire company is running on technology and this person is driving our whole entire operation.
Yeah. Looking more and more to CISOs for answers to hard business questions. Like, hey, how can we make our processes more efficient and our products more profitable and everything else? And how do you hit the bottom line? It's forcing them to think about IT in a very, very different way. Unfortunately,
we're secure. We're secure. We have Cisco picks. We're good.
That's all we need. We're happy.
We talked a little bit before.
That's an oldie.
Yeah, exactly. I always like bringing that one up. You brought before the show, we started talking about, like, hey, some trends going on, and I don't know who drives these trends or if it's just something that everybody's talking about. But you had a couple that really stuck out, and I guess let's run through those.
I got a big one here. Number one is what I think. So these are my opinions, and I'd love to debate these and talk about them.
The views and opinions expressed on the show.
Right.
Do not reflect. Right. So these are my own thoughts based on what I see, what I hear, and what I know that people are kind of looking forward to. The decline of password-only authentication. So
very true.
I know we've talked about it a lot in years past, but now the timing is right. The global culture and want and thirst for more security without, anything being more complex. Plus you've got you've got a generational gap that's happening where, and I'm right in the middle of that. There's the guys that have been around for a long time and, they do things a different way than maybe the kids that are coming right out of college or their 20s and 30s and they're young executives. So there's a shifting of guard and there's a different mentality. They were raised with hardcore security-laden infrastructure technology. Heck, you got to sign on to your game console just to play an online game. They're used to doing that. And it's not that big of a deal for them as it might be with others who are more concerned with end-user experience and everything else. So password-only authentication, I think, is going to accelerate. It's going to decline.
One of the things that drives me nuts is credit card transactions. Mm-hmm. And once in a while, you'll get the, hey, this is Chase, and we'll send you an email and maybe a text 10 minutes late.
Yeah.
There has to be a way to have an app jump on your phone. Are you at Meijer right now paying $300 worth of crap? Push
right.
One for yes, two for no. Mm-hmm. Right? Like while the transaction is occurring in real time. Yeah. Give me a push notification so I don't get those weird my card got shut off going to Canada to buy beer.
Right.
And it's like, I swiped it at the border. Yes, I'm at the beer store. Right. And it took 2 hours to get it back.
And how does your bank not understand that that's you?
Right. Mine no longer does it because it's like, oh, you're in India this week? Cool. You're in London this week? Cool. Whatever. Like,
right.
Amex gives two shits right now. But I think you're right about it being a generational thing because everything we use, Facebook pushes it. Google pushes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm into cryptocurrencies now. So Binance uses it and Coinbase uses it. And all these people use multi-factor authentication and they all go into my Duo app. So I'm totally used to that as my generation. Right. And I can see how it being more difficult, folks who don't have smartphones. I mean, it's not a token anymore. It's actually an app on your smartphone. And if you're not into apps, you may have a problem with it.
Exactly. The thing that frightens me, and I'm sorry.
I was just going back to the card authentication thing.
Right, right.
You got me thinking about video games here. There's a game company, Blizzard. They do World of Warcraft.
Might have heard of them.
Yeah, who heard of World of Warcraft before? But the thing about that is when you log into Blizzard, just a game, logging into a game, you will instantly get a notification saying, hey, are you this person logging into this game? So, I can't imagine how hard it would be to implement something like that into a credit card or something like that, or your debit card. Like, hey, did you buy these pretzels or something like that? I feel like there could be a notification going to your phone saying, approve this purchase. You know, it's like the second you make that transaction.
Sure, real time. Right, yeah, right. Exactly.
So, Bob, you mentioned something really, really interesting. It's actually part of another change or prediction, I guess, if you will. The use, the real world use and application of predictive analytics or a behavioral baseline for certain things. I'm not saying for the private citizens. I'm talking about more corporate USA enterprise where you go to work and you exhibit a certain pattern of behavior. You log in around the same time every day. You log out around the same time every day. You launch certain apps. You access certain data. You travel a little bit, that kind of thing. So imagine that now over a period of several months or half a year. You're going to get a really good baseline for what Dan Gregory looks like in over a period of 6 months. There's some spikes. There's some lulls, vacations, and perhaps. But you can glean out everything that would look normal to me, and then evaluate that data. I think this is going to happen more and more. It has to, because it's getting more easier to do. It's more obtainable. There are some amazing things that are coming up right now where artificial intelligence and machine learning, et cetera, are being used to accelerate the effective use of that. So it's that middle section.
It's not just weird stuff going on. It's who's doing the weird stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like, this doesn't look like – it looks like Dan, but it's coming from all the wrong spots. And the timing is off, and the cadence is different. And all
for example, it's Bob, and yes, he's in Canada, but it's a beer store. It's probably Bob.
Right.
Or Bob is in White Castle, and it's 9:30 in the morning. Something's obviously wrong.
Right. Exactly.
Wait. He just bought a Domino's pizza. It's definitely not Bob. Call the police.
They have good coffee at White Castle, by the way.
Yeah. Wait. He's at a White Castle. No. His order pattern says he's been having that Grubhub lately.
Right.
Machine learning. Right.
It's funny. You guys just actually did the one thing I didn't want to avoid, but I knew it would be a good second or follow-up to the corporate's fine, right? Hey, it's your data, your equipment. I get it. I'm an employee and I'm here to, you know, work for you because you're making me, giving me a living. Now, if it's a personal thing, right, that's a totally different concept of this. And by the way, who's collecting that data and how are they collecting that data and where's it going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it going towards marketing? Is it going towards, you know, big company
yes,
USA?
Almost always all marketing that, right? And advertising. Yes.
Exactly. Right. We all see it. We were just talking about it a little bit ago is, you know, it's not a coincidence that when you browse for that new jacket and you go to Amazon and guess what? The very first thing is that exact same new jacket you're just looking for.
Or I don't always shop for things on Amazon, but when I do, there's an ad waiting for me about it on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like spooky. It's can almost read your mind at this point. The concept is the use of analytics though. Effectively using those to increase security or not to replace it. We're not ready to do that yet. Just like endpoint security solutions aren't ready to get rid of their definition based scanning techniques that'll eventually die. But we're talking more or less an enhancer now, which is going to, you know, greatly impact, security teams, the way they do work, the way they're more predictive instead of reactive. I think it's going to be a game changer though. We're going to see a lot more of that coming up, a big spike. Yeah.
That's it.
No, I got more.
Let's run them. Yeah.
Yeah. Compromised IoT devices. So everywhere we look, you know, IoT is baked into everything we touch. That, you know, and the analogy is kind of, it's tired, and we all go yeah, because really is that reality? My toaster just got hacked. That kind of thing. The concept of it though is expressing the fact that everything you come in
contact
with.
Bob has a toddler in his house that constantly hacks his thermostat
really?
By just walking up to it.
Yeah. She runs it up to 90 like every time.
Really? Did she talk to the Nest? Or she talks
to the Alexa.
Oh, to Alexa? Alexa.
Just potty words, to the Alexa. She's... So, no,
that's
but let's,
awesome. But yeah, that's the whole concept with IoT and security issues that are going to come.
Are enterprises using IoT? Like our enterprises are, is the, you know, XYZ automotive supplier using IoT Nests, Alexas, the plug-in devices, are they disallowing it at the desk? Are they allowing it? Are they allowing Google Homes? Like that's something I'm kind of not privy to right now.
I don't want to say no to that. I'm sure there's a small little recreational use of that going on right now, but by and large. But what I'm talking about is the parts and the components and the products that these companies make are laden with IoT. We have hundreds of customers, as you know, Bob, that make a product. And baked into the firmware our IoT devices. Okay, they're connecting their products. So get back to the CISO being more part of the business. They're getting pulled into that in that direction, saying we need someone to make sure that when the code is written for the firmware, when it's flashed onto the chips, when we release this version of this new gadget that's going to go on 90% of the cars that are on the road today, type of company, we're talking about effectively potentially impacting people's lives if this doesn't work right. So we need to make sure that you, the CISO, are applying what you do to the IT infrastructure internally to these devices that we make and put our name on.
And that's something that hasn't been a big consideration for a long time.
No.
Right? There are so many hacks about IoT devices that we read about every day. When did the shift start, or is it still not shifted yet?
It's shifting, I would say.
Shifting.
That's just my view right now. Yeah. But we talk to a lot, and we are in the the Motor City, so we do have an advantage in this one topic. At least when it comes to automotive, right? We work with a lot of these companies. It's shifting within those organizations because we've had a majority of them in a room at the same time and pick their brains on this. And they all kind of nod when you say, is it getting becoming more of a challenge for you to how to address security within the IoT of the devices your company makes and how you're addressing that? Do you have organizations or vendors or solutions you can even go to that'll help you solve that problem? Can we help you? How can we help you? That kind of thing. So there's a whole new thing that's shifting. I think the mentality is there, but right now there's no real clear way on how to do it. We're baking those flaws into our IoT devices, and they're harder to fix. They're more exploitable more and more now, and sometimes they're very dangerous because we're talking about the physical world now meeting the virtual world, like a car that steers itself or whatever, parked itself, that kind of thing.
I've said it once, I've said it a million times. Like, Audi has those commercials where our cars make 4,000 decisions every second. Wow. I will never buy an Audi.
Yeah, they're pretty good cars.
I'm just saying, I know programmers, you should know better.
Right, right. And I think people are like, well, why would anyone ever hack our blank? I think that's the attitude.
Because
it's hackable.
Right.
Right.
I can turn it into a botnet, a thermostat, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm going to put on my old hat guy here for a minute, and Dave and Bob, join me in this journey here. Remember back in the day when hackers just hacked just for notoriety, just to see if they could break something?
Remember back when hackers actually, hacking actually meant something fairly good? Because you were exploring. You were checking shit out, and you would leave a little text file the root directory. Hey, here's how I got in. You might want to patch this. Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
Right.
And then along came the script kiddies. And now,
teardrop.
Now it's monetized. You can make money. It's a billion-dollar organization.
It is a state-sponsored industry.
Right. Well, no, I mean, that's part of the problem these days is that you can – back in the day, if you were going to be a hacker, you had to learn and you had to know and you had to understand. Now you don't. Now you go to one of 87 million websites, download whatever powerful-ass tool you want to download – pop in a URL and click play, and that site's got a DDoS attack going against it. That's kind of the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no with great power comes great responsibility understanding.
Are you saying there wasn't Google before Google?
I mean, Alta Vista hardly counted.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
All right. Alta Vista.
Or Ask Jeeves.
Wow. Ask Jeeves.
So the concept on that one, excuse me, is IoT, and it's pervasive, and we're going to have to learn better ways to deal with it. So attacks that compromise IoT devices are generally going to get worse because there's more of them, and they're targets. They just are. SCADA systems, this goes way back to the beginning, right? That's all there used to be is, actual manufacturing systems that would turn on a valve or off a valve, speed up a conveyor belt, slow it down, do whatever. The SCADA systems are what allow that to happen. They control those motions that become something in the physical world. There have been hacks out for those since they were invented. I mean, since they've been around. Lateral logic flaws, the Allen Bradley systems. You can hack those, turn off, a machine's heating system, and it gums up the machine forever and, costs $1 million to fix.
Or even worse, turns off the outflow vents for the nuclear reactor.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Melts the reactor down, right? That was Stuxnet.
Iran.
Stuxnet, exactly. Yes. Iran.
Yeah, it was only supposed to stay in that one place, and it got out. Right. But you're exactly right.
Yeah, we just left it, we just left it on thumb drives.
Right.
Everywhere for
you
three square miles.
It all over.
Yeah.
Ooh, a thumb drive.
Yeah.
It's a 32 GBs.
Yeah. Dude, that's literally how that happened.
Well, with a label that says naked pics on it.
Yep.
Who's not going to pick that up?
Especially in Iran.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So the last one I got is trust, unfortunately. And I don't mean trust between people. but more or less between organizations and systems, is going to be a casualty of war more and more as cybercrime defenses increase. So right now, what I'm talking about there is, again, it's not the trust, hey, I trust you, Dave, as a person. It's the trust between my organization and yours. If we want to have a free exchange of ideas and electronic commerce and revenue and et cetera, the trust factors between us are going to have to increase because as we engage more in a war on cybercrime, you have to do things like encryption, okay? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the good and bad about encryption is the good word about encryption is everybody should do it. It's generally a good thing. It makes the hackers' jobs harder in general across the board. The bad thing is if you want to secure the data going through that secure pipe or that secure channel, you still have to inspect it. Like that yep. still doesn't mean Sally in accounting can't email Bob in accounting at another company and say, hey, guess what? Here's all of our financial data. I'll be joining you guys, your organization in a month. It's going to be encrypted. No one's going to see it. I can't inspect it. So the trust between those two organizations is going to have to change and become more stringent and different, I'll call it. Maybe not so much stringent, but we're going to have to figure out better ways of inspecting the traffic before it gets encrypted, or to decrypt it, look at it, and recrypt it again. That'll introduce some other challenges. But trust being a casualty of the war on cybercrime.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, almost every major hack you've heard recently has boiled down to third-party vendor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's you know, somebody found the weakest link in the system mm-hmm. or in the chain that allowed them to gain access to all of the things upstream. That's yeah. where the issues are.
Exactly. You don't kill the whale with one shot. You attach a bunch of leeches to it and let it suck it dry.
Yep.
And so it's that's that third party vendor risk management. Actually, it's one of the other items that I was going to talk about. But cybersecurity is only as good as its weakest link, and your links in this case are your third parties that connect to your organization. You can have the perfect network. You're still going to have to poke a little hole in it to allow data in and out of it. Otherwise, you're back in 1970 and everybody works on their own independently. It's the age of the internet. So
token ring for everyone.
Right. Wow. Yes. ARPNet and BNC connectors
right.
and all that fun stuff. Yeah. Vampire taps and swearing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Wow.
But hey, Dan, we're going to cut you loose. I hate to do
no problem,
it, but we're
man.
Up on the top.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, if you want to dive deeper into what Dan's talking about, it's a phenomenal conversation. Check him out at the Security Jabber podcast right here at Podcast Detroit. I believe it's
everywhere. Find podcasts are sold.
Yeah. I believe it's securityjabber.com as well.
Securityjabber.com, yep. Yeah.
And then if you want to see him at work, cbisecure.com.
Correct.
Right down Detroit, right across from you can see the little Woodward corridor right on Library Street.
Yeah, right there behind the CompuWare building. Yeah, yep. Right in the middle of all the fun.
But no, appreciate the conversation. Appreciate the insight. We'll definitely bring you back whenever you're available. So,
we're gonna take
a quick break. We're going to be back with Ian and Chris from Soothsayer Analytics talking big data. This is the IT and the D show.
And we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT in the D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Segment 3. This is episode 229 of the one and only IT in the D Show, broadcasting live here in Studio 1 in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek.
Woo.
Nuri the FNG. What? Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker. Find us online. ITinTheD.com. Don't forget, hit the meet tab for all the meetups that's coming up. We have a crazy schedule over the next year.
Yeah, pretty much. That's reality.
But we will see you soon. And otherwise, appreciate you listening.
Yeah.
So, hey, we're lucky enough to be joined last minute. This is like, we start the new year and we're like, oh crap, we don't have any guests. we got introduced to,
glad we can be your fillers.
Yeah, exactly. But we got introduced to, with our old friend, Kasten Thomas, but we have Ian and Chris on the line from Soothsayer Analytics. Gentlemen, how are we?
Soothsayer.
That's what I said. Soothsayer.
Not Soothsayer.
I said Sooth.
It's not someone named
we
Sue.
We accept both.
It's not someone who's named Sue who's a sayer.
No, Sooth.
It's Sooth.
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 We do have a Sue.
Hi, this is Sue, a Soothsayer.
Yeah. John's out with Snout Systems, yeah.
So,
hey, fellas. Hey, go ahead.
No, I say, Chris, you're one of the co-founders. Ian's in studio with us. He's one of your biz dev reps. I guess, I don't know if you want to ask Ian first or Chris. I guess, give us a kind of mile-high overview of what you do, and then let's dive a little deeper.
Yes, yeah, certainly. And sorry I couldn't be in person for the pregame inebriation. I've been remotely, though, working with a bottle of absinthe in your honor. So I should also quickly apologize in advance for the voice going out. I just got back from a wedding in India and I'm reacquainting myself with breathable air.
I go there quite a bit for work. I was 3 times in 60 days. Wow. So I totally get what you're talking about.
He likes to go bang Allure a lot.
Yeah, say we did, for like for a year we thought he was dating somebody named Allure in India. I mean.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, so quickly, at Soothsayer, we build artificial intelligence-driven business solutions ranging from predicting nuclear reactor failures to forecasting customer lifetime value, from optimizing supply chains to detecting defects in contact lenses with computer vision and all sorts of things in between. Happy to give a little more exaggerated example if you'd like.
Can you tell me when I'm going to die?
in 12 years, 3 months.
Oh, shit.
Better live it up.
You're gonna hit my
from all that beer you drink at the beginning,
right? So, I mean, that's a broad spectrum, if you don't mind me saying, of like, okay, here's all the stuff we're doing. I mean, what's the basis? I guess how do you even start those conversations?
Definitely a good question. So a lot of times we'll just sit down with, thought leaders or, C-level folks, VPs, whoever it may be. They say, hey, we have all these problems we want to solve. We talk about what kind of data they're collecting, what kind of ROI that they could capture from solving the problems. And then we put together some kind of simple statement of work. You're right, though, it is definitely broad. And the reason being is we have teams segmented into different groups, one being pattern recognition, and especially in high dimensional spaces, another for predictive and prescriptive analytics, another for optimization, another for text analytics and natural language processing, and then finally for the computer vision.
Interesting. Oh my God.
Mary's got the look on his face.
A deer in the headlight. I'm sitting here, I'm like, Jesus, that's such a large scope. Because any one of those, in my opinion, is almost an entire discipline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, very much so. Well, so
if it would help, I can give a quick example that kind of incorporates the pattern recognition, predictive analytics, and natural language processing.
Sure, shoot. Go ahead.
Sure. So, this is with one of the largest pharmaceutical companies on earth. Obviously, I can't say a name here, but essentially they have hundreds of thousands of clinical trials going on at any given moment. And they're capturing all sorts of information in these documents. They're called protocol documents. So each is a few hundred pages long, consists of elaborate semi-structured data, unstructured data, charts, graphs, doctor's notes, all these different things. And they said, hey, can you start by telling us what's leading to clinical trial failures? Because every time one happens, it costs us like $50,000. So we said, sure. So we did some pattern mining and we came up with all sorts of really granular insights, things like experiments focused on binging molecules with uncertified agents are failing in Norway's markets due to documentation issues or whatever it may be. So they said, this is great. Now, can we actually predict these? So we built this predictive system that says in advance, input all the different characteristics of a new trial, and we'll give you a risk rating of what's, the probability of failing and what it's going, what most likely is to, going to occur that's going to lead to it. And then so that basically became an automated system that as trials are going on, automated alerts are also sent to relevant stakeholders if there's any sort of issues so that they can intervene. But another cool piece that I thought might be interesting, because I think you were talking about a little bit of fraud detection earlier, yeah, where we basically did what's called graph analysis, but using machine learning, where we were able to identify all sorts of patterns of fraud. So, for instance, imagine you're a patient. I'm the doctor. It's a 15-week clinical trial, and you miss week 10 of the trial. It would be in my interest to fudge those numbers because otherwise it's null. I have to recruit new patients. I don't get paid for this one and so on. So that we found that in a substantial percentage of clinical trials, instead of reporting a patient is missed, they would take patient A's blood sample, patient B's stool sample, patient C's urine sample, and so on, and input those values in place.
If only you could see how happy you're making Bob right now.
I wish. Next time.
But fraud is such a big thing.
Bob, have you been part of these fraudulent clinical trials?
No, I have not.
Bob's just 11 and he loves poop.
Loves poop? Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
But fraud is such a big thing, and not just clinical trial industries, right? So fraud is huge in like in the insurance world, in the customer retail world, anything that has a call center. These are big targets for fraud, and I guess you can use your models to help detect those things, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Certainly. Yeah, so we've even done things like identify the probability of like bankers to violate foreign exchange rates, foreign exchange laws, and things like that as well. So yeah, definitely, it's not our core area, but it's definitely something that people approach us with on a fairly regular basis.
So, and just kind of scrolling through some of the services you offer, because and I mean, here's the thing: do not worry about dumbing it down. By all means, dumb it down, because one thing we've learned is that our listeners are not necessarily in this industry. So, talk to me about unstructured data and how you deal with that and what that process looks like.
Sure. So, I mean, we work with a variety of different unstructured sources of data. So, for instance, I had mentioned looking at defects in contact lenses. So, essentially, what the client here had done is they had set up all of these really high-resolution, high-speed cameras, and we built algorithms that would study these images or these videos as or these contacts as they were coming through. And we would identify all sorts of different things. You know, is is it a defect? First off, then what is the defect? Is it a central void issue? Is it a chemical composition issue? What is it, an edge tear? Whatever it may be. But using AI, we can start to form these understandings of what means what a defect would look like, and then start predicting them in advance by tying that back to things like vendors are supplying, the vendors supplying input materials, or, you know, is it a machine A, or what time of the day it is, or who's operating the machines, and all of these different things. Text is another big area, obviously. So, for instance, right now we're working with a major utility where they have all of these reports where people call in and say that there's this issue. And then they have all these service engineers that go out and they file reports. And so we're looking at all of this data and answering, you know, dozens of different questions about what's leading to, you know, whether it's a natural gas leak or a, you know, a main break or whatever it may be. But the point is, whether it's sensor data, text data, images, it really doesn't matter. The state of the art AI techniques today are solving all sorts of cool problems.
So is this technology that you've developed yourself, your own AI platform, or is your secret sauce in your algorithms?
Good question. So the team is 25 folks. Everybody has a PhD or master's, heavy background in math and programming, as you can imagine. And there are about 75 patents between us. However, the beauty of AI is that so much of it today, the advancement is just being open sourced. So, you know, a researcher from Stanford develops something today and you can use it now tomorrow with some kind of, you know, just using a library that exists in R or Python. So it's not always that you reinvent the wheel. But the beauty, again, is that it's open source, so much of it now with R and Python, that you can take what someone else has built and readily leverage it towards solving new problems. That said, we do build a lot of IP for customers as well.
Well, I was going to say, so, I mean, I guess that's the, you know, it sounds like the answer to this is going to be yes. But so what area are you trying to focus the most on? I mean, is it, you know, doing that private consulting for customers, or, you know, setting up new shops within their environment? I mean, I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, from like you, if you're sitting down and saying, okay, who's our target customer? Who's our target demographic? Who are you most trying to reach right now?
So it's a great question. And I know the sales guy is going to want to say, hey, you know, identify one or two markets and focus heavily in that, right? It just so happens, though, that with referrals and just natural leads and things like that, that it's been a wide array of companies. So not to talk specifics with anybody, but you can think, you know, Abercrombie, Dun & Bradstreet, Ford, Express, Stanley Steamer, Wendy's, all these big companies, right? And solving all sorts of different problems where they bring in the domain expertise and then we bring in some smart math guys that can also program and solve some interesting problems together. I had mentioned doing a lot of the AI driven, you know, business solutions, you could say. But our big focus right now is really on education and enabling companies and individuals to really advance where AI is today. So we've been offering a lot of these deep learning and artificial intelligence courses both in Michigan and Ohio. Yeah, so just to answer, yeah, education has been the big focus recently.
Yeah, I was going to say, so it looks like you've actually got, you know, you've got this advanced certificate program in big data analytics and optimization, and then some, you know, another one about deep learning and AI, and then a leadership seminar. Like, so what, so I mean, like the first one's 22 weeks and then 2 weeks in a day. Like, what does somebody, like, why, who, tell me why I'm going to those?
So I'll let Ian answer that. He's been involved pretty actively since day one.
Yeah, yeah. So really each of those education programs that we're offering has a different purpose and a different function for like certain individuals. So I guess I'll start from the 22-week one. That's roughly 6 months. That's a big commitment.
Right.
But really what that is really focusing on is it's taking someone who has a passion to get into data science but doesn't necessarily have the background right yet. And it starts from things like linear and logistic regression, and it moves to, you know, Hadoop, natural language processing, machine learning, and it takes you all the way up to AI and deep learning and all those, everything in between. And it's really designed to get someone from I want to do this to I can do this in a span of just 6 months.
Which is okay. Which is huge, because I mean, I think of so many people who want to jump careers or change into something different, and they're like, how do I get into this? How do I learn it? And something like data science isn't something you just pick up a
just
book and
hop
read
into,
on, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, there's no teach yourself data science in 24 hours.
There's definitely not a right. Become a Data Scientist for Dummies book
right.
at Barnes & Noble. I mean, I haven't come across it yet.
And data science is big money too, right? So I think the average salary of a data scientist is $118,000 a year.
It's pretty nice. It's between
– Not just that, though. It's the sexiest job of the 21st
oh,
century.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm a data scientist.
Absolutely.
Can I buy you some drinks?
Yeah, right, right.
The even though we're just, the nerdiest people.
Yeah, the ladies are just falling over, you know. I'm a data scientist. Oh, I feel faint.
Let's get my fainting couch.
Yes, yes, all the swimming ladies.
So, I mean, where does blockchain fall into all of this? Because I keep hearing people talking blockchain all the time, and they say you need to get into blockchain, but they don't tell me why or what. Where does blockchain fall into all of this?
So we have a PhD researcher in blockchain technology. Just one example now, we're building, so I had mentioned doing the solution kind of thing, but and to your point earlier, we also build, you can think like back-end AI systems for products. And so one of the things we're working on right now is a smart contract that involves blockchain as well as natural language processing and things like that to optimize contracts between people who own farmland and then the people who will ultimately lease it from them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's all sorts of opportunities for that, not just in cryptocurrency, but just the whole idea of the smart contracts and all of that.
Go, can you go a step farther than that? Because like I'm like land, like you're going farmland. I'm like, wait, what? Like, no, well, like, do you mind taking that a step down?
Potentially, I guess. But I would just say blockchain is not a huge emphasis of ours. It's more okay. of we have one person working on it at mm-hmm. this point. So we're more, as I mentioned, more focused in taking massive amounts of data and in trying to find patterns in it and predicting outcomes or optimizing where things will go.
Fair, fair. No, I would just, you know, I live and breathe this stuff every day on the data security side. That's why I'm kind of on the sales side. So that's why I'm kind of a, you know, I just want to see where everything's kind of going left and right in terms of big data and then also with the with everything else.
Absolutely.
No, certainly a good question. We can always have a follow up and get some one of the experts on the line for that if you'd like. I mean, I could talk broadly of where AI is going, you know, where it's at and so on if you'd like. Maybe not in the blockchain area so much.
Yeah,
recanting of things you've already heard.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember honestly, I mean, back in the day, and back in the day, I mean, like 98, 99, when I was in the emerging technologies group at GM, you know, the first, you know, starting to play around with neural networks and, you know, everything, you know, TCLTK was the hot language at that point and all that fun stuff. So, I mean, it is interesting to see where this stuff has come and where it's going. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. The things that are being done with deep learning today are insane. Like we were just doing, we've built probably 100 different problems or solved probably 100 different problems with it. But just to give you an example of the difference in accuracies, when someone is doing something like forecasting credit risk, they're traditionally doing just, you know, essentially logistic regression on top of logistic regression and maybe getting 75% classification accuracy. with no domain expertise, we can take the same data set and we did something recently and we got 95% classification accuracy. Now, obviously you could say there's some overfitting and so on there. But the point is, I mean, it's just seeing crazy things, and it's obviously what's leading to, you know, self-driving vehicles and Spotify's, you know, recommendation engines and all these cool things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and honestly, so and one of the other things I see in here is that, so I guess talk to me a little bit about corporate training. Like what are you hopping into companies and doing at that point?
Yeah, certainly. So a lot of times it just depends on what someone's looking for. So in the case of like working with a major retailer, we had sat down with them. We understood all the different problems that they were looking to solve. So for instance, you know, demand forecasting or ship from store optimization, which is essentially instead of building a new $1 billion distribution center, you model certain geographically strategic stores as mini distribution centers. So we sat down with them. We understood all the different problems they wanted to solve. And then we put together a custom 1 week boot camp to teach them the most advanced methods on how to solve all those different problems. And then also worked with them to put together solution architectures so that they could build it themselves. And then as that progressed, we do, you know, all sorts of ongoing, you could say, mentoring to make sure that they are doing everything correctly, or if they hit any specific get or issues and they can't do it, you know, maybe we'll write a few pieces of code for them or whatever. In other cases, it's, you know, companies brand new into analytics. And so we'll sit down with all of the decision makers, all the business leaders and so on, and understand the problems they have and put together a real detailed roadmap for solving them in the proper order.
I think that's incredible, because if I was a company and I was managing, you know, in your instance, retail distribution, and I was 75% accurate, that means I have 25% stuff just hanging around not sold. Mm-hmm. So that makes me incredibly inefficient. So basically, mm-hmm. any company doing any kind of supply chain or anything where anything has to be somewhere, going from 75% to 95% could revolutionize their business.
It really
For sure.
It sells itself. Sure. Like, you guys' job is so easy. As salespeople sell this stuff, I can make you 20% more efficient based on your Excel spreadsheets that are bullshit, right? I mean,
not only that, but we would automate all that Excel stuff, so you wouldn't even have to have a human doing it at some point.
But Don has done it for 20 years.
Right. She's got so many macros built. It's perfect. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yes. What is she going to do with all that free time?
Well, and so, like, one of the things we always love to see, I'm curious, talk to me a little bit about this whole Kids Read Now thing that I see featured on your website.
Oh, yeah. So this is we try to do some charity work here. And so this is it's a great company started by the former CEO of a company called One Call Now. You probably, whether you know them or not, you're probably familiar with their technology, because most of the churches and schools and so on use their technology for sending out automated alerts. So he started the company with an interest really in progressing the reading abilities of school of kids, because there's a huge fall off when you think about the summertime if they're not reading. Yep. And so they have all this data and they really want, you know, demographics.
I just saw that with my kids over their break.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
Oh, I just said I saw that with my kids over their over the break. You know, they just had, you know, basically 2 weeks off. And, you know, so, you know, last night we're sitting around, hey, so this little piece of paper that you just showed me that came home from the teacher that, you know, that nobody ever paid attention to, were you on your iPad doing your reading like you were supposed to be? No. Did you go through this like you were supposed to be? No.
No, Dad, I was downloading apps that listen to the TV to tell advertisers what I'm watching.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Man.
Exactly.
Remember the days.
So, yeah, I mean, we were essentially analyzing the the data for them to try to give them all sorts of insights around what's leading to high and low performance and what kind of, you know, actionable factors contribute that they can mess around with to help improve the reading scores.
Man.
Very cool.
Yeah,
anything we didn't touch on.
We're mind blown.
Well, no, because there are like 9 different topics that I could deep dive on, and I don't honestly know where to start. So I'm just going to go with, is there anything that we should have touched on that we haven't?
I mean, there's certainly all sorts of cool things going on with AI today. And I guess I would just say that be prepared for a society where machines are going to be more intelligent than humans. Obviously, that's quantitatively, not in an emotional sense. But it's going to have a tremendous impact on everybody and every company. It's essentially this year's, or not this year's, but the century's electricity. And, you know, as it's progressing, all sorts of unimaginable innovations are really going to become feasible.
Bob's third biggest fear are the Google robots.
Seriously.
What are one and two?
Michael's, it's an art and craft supply store. And then it's equally divided among clowns, mushrooms,
country
and bare
music.
Feet.
And vegetarians.
Vegetarians. No vegans.
Man, I'm a vegetarian. What kind of mushrooms are you talking about though?
Any of them.
Amsterdam.
We'll talk later.
No, so yeah, I mean, that's the scary part about AI is, you know, I mean, you know, that's kind of the worst case scenario that everybody keeps jumping to is, you know, Terminators.
And that's a really great question. You know, what's going to stop? Will AI be our destruction? I think Elon Musk has talked about it and how he thinks that if we don't have some kind of worldwide governments, AI is going to rise up and take over us.
No, isn't the UN already bringing up sanctions that they can't have, like, basically guns, missiles on, even though we're doing it with drones? On like robots, like the Boston Scientific, the Forest Google robots.
Freaky as shit. Did you see the Black Mirror episode with a dog?
Yeah.
Yes.
But like putting on sentry guns on those, like I think the UN is actually talking about not having that a thing.
So is this a dystopian science fiction trope or is this actually possibly a threat?
I think it could go either way.
Yeah.
But I have a good friend who's the CTO of a big Wall Street company. Jim Bacon, and he says it really is the fear factor with AI is probably the biggest in history because, you know, there's all these companies and all these entities that are going to seek to ban the advancements and they're going to be supported by all these ideologues in the process. And I was going to say another friend of mine, Julian Morris, who's a wonderful economist from Reason Foundation, articulated, I think, really well when he said that the difference between past innovation and what we're seeing today is that, in a sense, there's really nowhere to go from the knowledge economy because, you know, in the past, knowledge workers were, you know, enjoyed the luxury of disrupting all the blue collar segments of society. Mm-hmm. And obviously we benefited tremendously. But the interesting dynamic that's taking place with AI is that now the knowledge worker is introducing self-disrupting technology, which really could lead to previously unimagined consequences.
Yeah, great. I'm writing myself out of a job. Great.
That's, we'll be dead or retired by then, so don't worry about it.
And it's even worse because we're training 900 engineers a year. So imagine, I mean, we're going to be out of business in a year. Nice talking to you guys.
Planned obsolescence, yeah.
Right, right.
All right, so hey, where do people go to find out more about you guys?
Yeah, wonderful. Soothsayeranalytics.com, SOOTHSAYER, analytics.com.
Yep.
All right, cool. Hey, Chris, get your butt into Detroit sometime so you can sit down in the studio and we can we'll have just you in for an entire show because we want to. there's a whole slew of stuff we want to talk about with you.
Yeah, well, wonderful. And actually, Dr. Morty, our chief scientist, and I are going to both be in town here in a couple of weeks, so we'll hit you up and we'll come out and drink some beer together.
Perfect. We'll look forward to that.
We might know a brewery we can go to.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe one or 12.
Yeah. Right, right. And then, Ian, thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, we're going to end things here for episode 229 of the IT and the D Show. We'd like to thank Dan Gregory from CBI Secure and from the Security Jabber podcast. Also, Chris and Ian from Soothsayer Analytics. We appreciate the time spent with us. Do us all a favor and drink up all your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Drive careful. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Long live Flash. You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Make the run. The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the can.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, own the trees. Owns. 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 Owns.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass. Go home. Unplug. Get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
I love this city.
I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.